Sorry,
all right,
I just had a fart first. All right, now you can hit record.
I'm glad I hit record when I did. That's all I'm going to say.
Now presenting the Webcomic Beacon Newscast.
Alright, welcome one and all to the Webcomic Beacon. This is the newscast. This is episode 176 of the Webcomic Beacon, the newscast for April 3rd, 2011. My name is Ross Scott. I am from The System, which can be found at systemcomic.com. With me this week, two special guests, both from The Gilded Age, which can be found at gildedage.net, spelled like G-U-I-L-D-E-D, just for those of you with spell checkers out there. By the way, you guys don't sell jewelry, which is what I discovered when I went to the wrong gildedage.net. Learned that the hard way. But it's Phil Kahn and T. Campbell. Welcome both to the show.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure to be here in this recording studio. Very, very plush. The green room was fantastic.
Wasn't it? I know. We did manage to get you only green M&Ms, just like you asked for.
Man, you know, because any other M&M is just a lesser M&M and not worthy of the God's blessing.
It's true.
And Evian, you know, I only drink Evian after becoming a crossword constructor. I mean, all the vowels just taste better.
Mm. Very important. Now, T, I've heard it said that you once borrowed a pen from my friend Dern and never gave it back. Is that true?
Well, Phil has many colorful stories about the absentness of my mind. So I said it is. While I don't remember this, it is very. It is a very likely possibility.
He's getting old. I mean, he's getting vintage. That's a nice way of saying it, right?
Yeah, that sounds good. I like vintage. You know. I see you're typing into a chat, but I don't know where that chat is. Stupid new Skype.
I made a very off-color joke in reference to green M&Ms being superior M&M.
Oh, well, they are the higher race.
They are the higher race, and all the other M&Ms are sent to M&M Marshwitz.
Ooh, ouch.
I went there.
You did. Wow. Okay. So you guys do.
Sorry.
You guys do Gilded Age, which is a story-based comic that takes place in kind of a would you call it a MMORPG-esque fantasy world?
That's something we're being a little cagey about.
Well, I saw the shirt going down in the most recent chapter. That's kind of getting into that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, we're definitely trying to make it a point, you know, the whole is it or isn't it real idea, but to describe it as an MMO-influenced universe would be accurate, yes.
Well, the reason I describe it that way is because it seems to have, you know, it takes itself seriously in its own world, and then every once in a while there'll be, like, douchebag achievement unlocked, you know, appearing, or comments that seem kind of out of tone with that universe and almost referential of either pop culture or just like a snarkiness that you don't really expect to see in that universe. Mm-hmm. But I think that's just Phil's writing.
It's definitely both of us. I've followed webcomics like Order of the Stick and Earthworld and a couple of printed comics like Knights of the Dinner Table
Now, when you say Earthworld, you mean Rob Balder's Earthworld, a comic by Rob Balder, right?
The comic by Rob Balder, which
that's
right.
No, that's the full name. Rob Balder's Earthworld, the comic by Rob Balder. That's the official name.
I have nothing
right?
at all to say about this.
I'm pretty sure that's how he likes it referred to in print by the media, as it were.
Not gonna rise to this one.
Well, I get a nickel every time I say Rob Balder, so, you know, I'm saving up for a candy bar here.
See, I feel like I lose a nickel every time I say Rob Balder, so. Sorry, go ahead, T. So you've been reading all these other webcomics that are in that vein.
Yeah, and I'm somebody who's very interested in fiction itself, in the workings of fiction, and one of the comments from people who read a lot of my different comics is that there's usually it's usually inevitable that going on long enough a T. Campbell project will get a little meta. With regard to games, you know, I feel like there's a whole different mode of storytelling to explore, a whole different approach to building characters and plots and ideas, and you know, this is going to sound real, real highfalutin, but
not at all, dude.
But trying to bring that into the more traditional forms of storytelling that comics have built up, and just smashing the two of them together and seeing what happens in comedy and in drama, that's always interested me, and I think Gilded Age is probably the best opportunity I'll get in my life to explore it.
Well, for me, in regards to Gilded Age, it's interesting you brought up, T, the challenges that come with video game narrative, because there are a great many of them. Between the two of us, between T and I am absolutely the video game player of the two of us, you know.
Oh, yes.
I have to find crosswords for the DS for T, but I'm sure there is one. But anyway.
There's five. Are you kidding?
There's so many crosswords. There's like six whole puzzles on one cartridge. But anyway. So what I feel is the most interesting parts about, you know, what we could call the narrative challenge of video games is when you are presented with preposterous situations and you have to suspend your disbelief in regular, you know, books or movies or TV, it's a lot easier to do. But when you're doing it in a game, you have to wrestle your suspension of disbelief in the story against the game mechanics that prevent you from doing X and Y. Let's take, for example, I want to go ahead and go with a classic Pokemon that many of us have played. And, you know, there are trees that you have to cut down to get access to secret pathways. And you're sitting there wondering, okay, I understand I need to cut down this tree to go over there, but I have a fire-breathing dragon, and I feel like
yeah,
that...
Yeah, you'd think the fire-breathing dragon would be able to help somehow in this endeavor.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. It's just wood. I think he can handle it. I'm not sure. We'll have to see how he feels, but...
Right.
It's like that. It's wrestling, you know, the game mechanics against the narrative, because you have to, whenever there's inconsistencies like that, you just have to shrug and move on, because they're not presenting you any other options.
Right. Now,
Phil and I are trying very hard to create something that works on both levels, that doesn't make you think, oh, well, this is obviously a game because something like that would never happen in real life, or...
And the original
concept
was to do a much closer parody to World of Warcraft than what we're doing right now, like a nearly direct parody. But we ended up ruling that it would be better if we made up our own game, because then we get to make up our own rules.
Exactly. now, just real quickly, I know you both... You guys are both of two people I know, people that have been attached to a ton of projects in the past. Now, without listing off every single one, how many webcomic projects have each of you done at this point?
All right, now, are we including comics that are... Are we talking about projects that are just webcomics, or projects that are also peripherally about webcomics?
Yes, I will let you include your webcomics-based drinking podcast, if that's what you mean.
Oh, jeez, I had forgotten.
Oh, Lordy.
It wasn't even what I was driving at.
Oh, okay. Well, T, how many comics have you worked on at this point?
The figure that I like to whip out because it's a lot easier to keep track of these
Please,
days is over 4,000 pages of webcomics.
Wow.
I've done teen comedy, science fiction, tech satire, music industry satire. I keep pretty busy. Right now I'm producing four comics that are three times a week, two of them with partners like Phil. Working on a crossword related project, and
oh, that was an actual reference to crossword.
Trying to get into the Kindle market.
Oh,
what's
no,
that?
Yeah. T is absolutely crazy about crossword puzzles. It's very endearing.
Okay.
Yeah. If I had to, if somebody forced me out of the comics business tomorrow, if you know, God just came down and said, "You're done. Do something else," then I'd probably be doing crosswords full time.
I'll be sure to warn Will Shorts. Okay, so and Phil, how many do you have under your belt at this point?
Oh, jeez. I want to do a quick count in my head. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. I think I have worked on close to a dozen projects over the course of my life, and you know, I definitely had that crappy webcomic where, you know, me and my roommates are absolutely hysterical kind
yep.
of comic, you know.
Oh, I did too. It's cool.
Yeah, every I feel every comic artist has to get that stuff out of their system. And it's just like if you go to film school or whatever, everyone has to get that script where they write about how hard it is to wake up in the morning out of their system. You know, it's just everything every young artist has to just work out until they figure out how, something better to do. And there was the criticism blog, I'm just saying. There was the wiki, which had webcomics-themed cocktails. I mean, it still exists, I believe. You can still go to imjustdrinking.com and see a few. The entire wiki is very riddled with spam bots, but, you know, you can still find some interesting stuff in there. And I've tried a few comics by and by, you know, mostly ones that I've been drawing myself, and I completely lack the discipline. And then I found out from T that it's possible to get other suckers, I mean artists, to draw your comics for you, and here I am today.
He needed me to tell him this, you know. Stan Lee couldn't do it.
Yeah.
Okay, well, speaking of Stan Lee, I think it's time we actually get to some news articles. It's just, I was waiting for a good segue.
That wasn't it.
thank you, if I may, to, well, you know, sometimes you just gotta shove a good segue in and make it fit.
I guess Stan Lee, Marvel Comics, okay.
Yeah, that's where I was going with that. Okay, a quick thank you to Fess, who puts together the Webcomic Beacon every week. Tirelessly, you should check out his stuff at psiwebcomic.com. And Eric of Exern, which is exiern.com, who puts together our weekly news info and tips. So our first article of the week, this coming from Bleeding Cool originally, is news that Starbucks is now offering a bunch of digital content if you are in their store, one of which being Marvel Comics-related content. That you can download if, as long as you're in one of the 6,800 Starbucks locations.
Nice.
Well, that's very nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the Marvel Comics. Have you played with their Chrome app yet, Ross? The Marvel Comics Chrome app.
No, I have not.
It's interesting. I mean, it feels like a competent comic reading software. It's not CBR reader, like, or Comical, which is my favorite CBR reader. But I liked the service a lot at first because I was reading this really great Daredevil comic that came out recently where some serious stuff was going down, you know. Mm-hmm. I guess is what usually happens in big issues. And then halfway through, it was like, oh, you need a premium membership to finish reading this comic. And then I suddenly figured out that I hate this service completely. But to have it free at a Starbucks is nice, except that I don't ever go to Starbucks.
Yeah, I honestly...
I'm hoping that this leads to some comics actually produced for the Starbucks audience. That sure would be really nice. Only I hope the same thing about the bookstores about 10 years ago, and Marvel still seems to be dragging their feet and trying to figure this out. You know, you don't need me to go on for very long about the isolated culture of the comic book market. I think that's been pretty well covered by lots of other people.
That's true.
It's a good thing you brought it up then.
Yeah.
It needs to be, I feel like this news needs to be viewed in this light. It's an opportunity to reach people who are not going into the comic book store.
Yeah, and but it's
I would like
that-
and I would like to believe that Marvel would actually seize upon that opportunity. Unfortunately, history doesn't indicate that that seems likely. And you know, it bugs me that this goes straight to Marvel Comics as the largest and easiest to deal with comics connected corporate entity for someone like Starbucks. I mean, there should be a Too Much Coffee Man app at
Oh man.
Well, I'll tell you what there should be. There should be a new fifth size of coffee. They should just go ahead and make a Hulko or Hulka, or what's their faux Italo-Spanifrencho like way of saying Hulk? I wouldn't know.
Italo-Spanifrencho?
Italo-Spanifrencho, whatever they're
No, it's good. I can see that on shirts already.
Actually, why not just rename the Hulk character at the Venti?
The Incredible Venti.
You wouldn't want to see me when I'm caffeinated.
You wouldn't want to see me when I'm robust.
Oh.
All right, moving on.
Moving on. So, Diamond... Okay, a couple months ago, Diamond Distributors... this article, by the way, via Bleeding Cool once again... Diamond Distributors stopped selling books to Borders. Why? Because A, Borders is a sinking ship, and B, more importantly, they owe them $4 million.
Oh, word?
Word. And now Diamond is resuming selling books to Borders for reasons I'm not quite sure why. Also mentioned in the article, executives want about $8 million in bonuses, even though they owe around $200 million? Okay, I might have gotten that number wrong. But they owe millions and millions of dollars to a series of people, including $4 million to Diamond.
Well, so it's Borders' turn to get money for nothing.
Right. They're the new car company. They're the new please help save us. Where's Obama on this one, right? You know? I mean... If we can bail out some GM, why aren't we bailing out Borders, guys?
Because we had to bail out an entire industry, yeah. whereas Amazon is doing just fine, thank you. this strikes me as the least interesting of the 12 news articles that you showed to us.
I'm totally happy to move fast. But
and I mean, they decided that Borders was too much of a risk to keep investing their money 2 months ago, and then they changed their mind. I have nothing else to say about it.
Fair enough. By all means, feel free to not comment on every single article.
you don't know me at all, do you?
You invited him, man. This is all on you now.
This is where I note to the editor to just start cutting out every time he speaks, and we'll just get faster that way.
So I think the first email for arranging this whole episode was just to me, and then I'm like, hey, wait, shouldn't we bring T in too?
And fine. Here we are. Okay, so now on to one that I think there honestly is some discussion about, which is that Chris Onstad, creator of Akewood, has put his main comic on indefinite hiatus. This article came to us via Comics Talk and Comics Alliance, and links to – there's some articles about it. There was an interview with him over at Comics Alliance, and also links to his blog post where he put up the original note. Did you guys have a chance to read through this?
I read his interview, yeah. I like that he continues to not understand that he's a huge figure in webcomics.
Yeah, well, you know, I remember a few years ago, Phil, when you and I were on, I think, your podcast, arguing over whether or not Akewood was any good.
It so is.
and he says here on his blog post, quote, "You see, whenever I sat down to write over the last year or so, I had a growing nagging feeling that after 9 years, 1,700 strips, 1,000 character blog entries spanning 12 characters, 30 books, 700 subscriber pieces, the New Yorker pieces, tours, hundreds of interviews, terabytes of vitriolic hate mail incoming, running a merchandise mini empire, and generally feeling under the gun to dance for the public, I was getting a little burned out." Now, I hear that, and all I hear is, "Wah, first world problems. Oh, everyone loves me too much."
Well, I don't think that's necessarily true. I think he.
Fair.
No. I gotta say, no. That particular paragraph makes me think like that is a good problem for him to have, you know. But
well, it's a problem that a lot of the rest of us want to have.
Exactly.
But I mean, he might not be the type of person for it, and you know what? That's perfectly valid, as far as I'm concerned. And if he recognizes that in himself, then I mean, he can only do what's right by him.
Okay, well, you're a big Akewood fan. So what was your take on his post and the fact that he's going on hiatus and all this
stuff? I didn't read about the post. I didn't hear about the post. I only see the RSS feeds when the comics show up. So.
And this is why we have a newscast. Anyway,
this is why we have the news. Yeah, really. I had no idea, but when I told my girlfriend about this, and you know, that he was going on indefinite hiatus, and she just said, "Didn't he do that last year?" Right. So I think a lot of the fans are going to be completely unaffected by this, because at least most of us, at least I have, completely abandoned the idea that he'll be updating on any kind of schedule or even frequently. So. Right. I don't know. My expectations were already lowered, but if he needs to take a break and figure out what the hell he's doing, then power to him. As far as I'm concerned,
Yeah, I don't think he's going to be back for very long. Generally speaking, when people do this, when people follow this path of gradually updating less and less, and then stopping almost entirely, and then declaring a hiatus. It's over, and they just don't want to admit it. They just don't want to quite say, "I'll never do this again." Right. This is where it gets difficult, because I don't want to judge everyone else by my standards of doing things. I know that you've got to follow your muse, and that it's going to take you in a certain direction, and there's only so much you can do to fight it. My muse tells me that when I have a problem that's not going to, then when I have a problem that's keeping me from production, I want to be clear with myself and everybody else that it's, that I need to. I want to be clear and say, okay, this is ending here. We may be getting, we may revive it someday. We may not, but this is an end point until I say otherwise. And you know, beyond that, it's something that just happens to lots of people. It happens to Bill Watterson. It happened to the it happened just recently to the guy who did Troubletown, that got that got a fair amount of attention from a completely different alt comics fan base.
Have you guys ever experienced burnout? I mean, what we're asked to do as webcomic artists, or what we're agreeing to do in a lot of ways, is continue series. I mean, it's not 100%, but pretty much most webcomics isn't saying, I'm going to give you a comic today. It's, I'm going to keep giving you comics consistently from now until forever. And
well, it's interesting that you mentioned
stressful
that.
And burnout.
Yeah, I mean, I've definitely felt the burnout before. I've had projects where I just and that first webcomics project I mentioned, where my roommates and I are hilarious one. I was doing the storyline where I ended up killing myself off, and then I actually just had no idea where to go from there. So I pretty much just stopped the comic. I'm like, whoops, sorry guys, the wrong ending. Like you're doing a choose your own adventure and you pick the wrong page, but. I've definitely felt that burnout before on the meta webcomics materials that I've done, and at least I think T also is on board with this, but we have responded to this sensation of being burnt out by making our new projects ending oriented. So Gilded Age absolutely has an ending. We know what it's going to be, and we have a pretty good estimate of when that's going to be. We have a finite number of chapters we intend to do, which is usually in flux because we find that we like spending more time with the characters than we previously allotted ourselves.
Right.
But at least on T's end, you know, Penny and Aggie's wrapping up soon, isn't it?
Yeah, it's wrapping up at the it's wrapping up sometime this autumn. I'm being a little vague because it always ends up being more pages than I think it's going to be, but the. But yeah, I've always felt like a series should end before you run out of things to say about the chosen theme, and that is going to happen.
So it's not going to become Penny and Aggie and Poochie. We're not going to bring Poochie in at the last minute or anything.
No.
Whom?
Poochie? Come on, Simpsons.
Oh God, Poochie!
Come on!
Wow, man! You know there's such a dearth of Simpsons trivia that I can never recall all of it immediately.
Sorry,
I'm so sorry.
who would have been?
I believe
the
word you're looking for is abundance.
Is dearth the opposite of that?
We could have gone with.
Yeah.
Oh my bad.
I guess I could have gone with the alien from the Flintstones. That could have been another way to go.
Oh, the Gazoo! Yes,
that would have been like the classic jump the shark character, right?
Well, it's funny you mentioned Jump the Shark. We were accused of doing so much of that when we were putting our unique spin on our fantasy story. But
even though it was something we'd planned from the very beginning.
No one believes us. No one ever believes that anything we do that upsets them was something we were planning to do all along.
Yeah, this is what amazes me about getting into comics, and I guess I really should have I've known this because I used to do it to other people on the other side, but all critics are psychics.
Right.
They know everything about what we're thinking just by reading our work. It's amazing.
I'm stunned every day of the week that these people are not using their powers for more important things, like finding criminals or terrorists, or they're using their premonitionary powers because they are so clairvoyant in knowing what we're going to do. They're not using their amazing psychic freaking powers to, you know, avert disaster or any of that. So thank God that they're devoting all of their time and energy to making sure that we know that we suck now.
That didn't sound at all hateful. Now, I gotta say, I've been feeling a bit of burnout lately myself, so I'm pretty interested in this. Now, when you get to the point when your comic is your livelihood, which is clearly where Onstad is right now, like, he doesn't have another job. His job is the comic. And then that comes into peril. That's not just your creativity coming into peril or your current project coming into peril. That's your livelihood coming into peril.
Yeah,
I mean,
and
that's
it shows a great deal of integrity that he's willing to give that up instead of fake his way through and half-ass it and hope that inspiration will be restriking him sometime around 2014.
But
of course, I can't speak for how long he's done that already. I hope that he hasn't done it at all, but I'm not a psychic, so I wouldn't know.
But notice that he's still keeping the paid section, that if you pay extra the $3 a month, that part's still updating.
Well, yeah. And I don't disagree with him for that either, because if people, especially if he says,
I'm planning to do pretty much the same thing with Penny and Aggie.
Yeah, and eventually you're going to run out of bonus content if it's based on annotations of existing content, but for him, you know, obviously his largest livelihood came from his subscriber content, because he doesn't put ads on Akewood. And if he did, you know, I don't think he would even need the subscriber content. But he obviously has an aesthetic and a method, right, he probably chooses over others. But I don't fault him for that at all, because if he wants to keep that paycheck coming in, he obviously has to keep producing content. And there's just enough subscribers, I guess. And that's a good enough audience, large enough audience to cater to.
Okay, one last question about this, and I know we're spending a lot of time on this one, but I honestly think
that it's an interesting one.
This is the most interesting, like, and most pertaining to webcomics. Is that?
Well, you've got somebody else cutting this, right? So what do you care?
Yeah, that's true. By the way, thanks again to Fess. Anyway, that'll get kept in. Don't worry. So.
This will get cut too, but by the way, Fess, please remove my Eminem Marsh Schwitz joke. That was beyond tasteful.
But tasty. Anyway.
But delicious.
But delicious.
My God, no melting jokes. Oh, jeez.
You know, my mom listens to this and gives me, like, comment, like, annotated, like, her thoughts on everything that gets mentioned. I need to start reading those out every week. They're amazing. Anyway. No, the one other point that I want to make is, or question I want to ask is, when a comic becomes your full-time gig, when it becomes like Akewood is for him, where it's all he's doing, and, you know, he's doing the blog and the comic and the merch, and it's kind of everything, do you think that kind of heads you towards burnout faster? Because, like, right now, let's say you have a day job, or, you know, and then you're doing the comic on the side. That's another influence. It's another place to be getting inspiration and all that. But then suddenly all you're doing is eating this one thing, consuming this one thing all the time.
I see what you're saying. This is a case, I think, where different people respond very, very differently. It is true. There have been psychological studies that when you pay someone to do something that had previously been their hobby, in a lot of cases, the enjoyment drops significantly. On the other hand, I know people who derive a great deal of ego satisfaction from the fact that they make their living doing the thing that they think they're most equipped to do.
Yeah, I would love to get paid more for things
you're really
already doing.
You really, and I say this, I end up saying this a lot in a lot of different contexts, but you really have to know yourself. You have to know what motivates you. You have to know what you're scared of. You even have to know and accept the little quirks that make you slightly neurotic if you're going to use it all effectively to be as happy as you can. If you're somebody who burns out when they have one focus and nothing to distract them from, then don't do that. I think one of the reasons that I juggle so many projects is so that I can effectively distract myself if any one of them starts to feel too oppressive and too much like work.
Yeah.
T, is this is your day job to write all this comic stuff, or are you? Like, is
at this point, it's a combination. I'm doing some web promotions work and and I may be writing some TV commercials soon to keep all the bills balanced. But it's about it's about 50-50, and obviously I'm doing my best to make it a full time thing again.
Gotcha. Okay, cool.
When I get to that point, because I'm not there yet, but I imagine I would still do tech support on like the part time, because, you know, let's face it, it's a pretty easy job and the money's good. Squeeze that in between the comics. But on the topic of burning out, ultimately anything that you're passionate about in your life that suddenly transforms into an obligation, it will automatically and invariably change your opinion on the matter completely.
Right.
The same thing goes for personal relationships. Same thing goes for your job. Same thing goes for any hobby where you're just like, oh, wait, I used to do this for fun. Now I have to do it. And you have one or two responses of that. And, you know, I guess it just comes down to who you are. It's very much an individual thing.
Interesting. All right. Well, thanks for letting us dawdle here for a few minutes, guys. If you, the listener, has anything you'd like to add to this topic, be sure to go to the Webcomic Beacon's website, webcomicbeacon.com, and leave some comments on the newscast post. We'd love to continue the discussion there. Or feel free to send us an email at webcomicbeacon@gmail.com and weigh in there as well.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so moving on, Mark Millar.
You know, your name is all he needs. I mean,
I couldn't have timed that better. Phil, can you just be on standby to laugh at things whenever I say
that? Absolutely.
Thank
sure.
you. You're
funny.
You were really the Kevin Eubanks to my Leno there for a second. That was great.
Funny, Ross.
Have you guys seen this one? Have you heard about this? Have you heard about this? So Mark Millar is trying to start a UK-based con. He wanted to call it Superheroes Con, but due to copyright issues we'll talk about later, he couldn't. So it's now named Kapow and is in the UK. And there are 40 guests listed. Not one of them is female.
This is Mark Millar we're talking about, right?
This is Mark Millar we're talking about, yes.
So, I mean, I'm just wondering.
So the real news here is that Mark Millar does not have any female friends.
Well, by the way, this article originally found to us via Bleeding Cool and sourced from endofshow.com tells us that his first retort was on Twitter saying, "You realize this is being put together by five women, don't you? The reason the comic guests are mostly males is because the biggest names in the UK comics are male. Who is the big British female pro they're missing here?"
Posey Simmons.
Who?
Posey Simmons.
Posey Simmons? Well, let's see. I'm trying to see if her name gets mentioned in the article. Her name does not, in fact, get mentioned, but there are plenty of others that they could mention. Now, do you think that having 40 men on the guest list and not one female, do you think that's purposeful?
I don't think it's purposeful. I think it's absolutely clueless the way that just like creating a convention that's supposed to be the UK's version of the San Diego Comic-Con,
right,
and not calling it the London Comic-Con or something like that. Mark honestly strikes me as a sweet guy who really loves comics and superheroes.
Does
and
he really
blunders
love superheroes, man?
And just blunders his way into thinking that everyone else thinks like him, and that's a thought process that I can sympathize with, because I blundered along thinking that everyone thought like me on many issues for many years. But
other thing that
he's been in the business a while. It's time to wake up.
The other thing I should point out is that London Comic Expo, which is kind of another of the big London cons, manages to boast a lineup, it says in the article, that is of artists and writers, 50% of whom are female. So here we have one 0% female versus another 50% female.
My take on his comments of the issue is when he's presented with, you know, why are there no females, and his response is, which ones? Show me them. It betrays nothing but an unwillingness to acknowledge that it's even an issue, which is something that is usually a problem, you know, in feminist progress. It's just, you know, dudes just going, wait, what are you talking about? There aren't any British women that do this crap. I don't know any. You find them for me. Oh, well, the women are running this thing, so, you know, it's obviously, you know, for them. And, you know, T said it best. It's just clueless thinking. It's just absolutely clueless. But, you know, he doesn't have to have a clue. He's Mark Millar. Sorry, I'm not bitter. But, you know, I liked Civil War up to a point.
All right. Well, before we start getting into Civil War, we'll just move right on to the next article. So there's currently in place Marvel and DC share a copyright on the term superhero, both as one word or two. And the Sune Law PC group has challenged that claim. So not just a, you know, is the claim being challenged, but it's being challenged by a bunch of lawyers, like on behalf of themselves, as opposed to on behalf of some other person. They're challenging it because apparently a bunch of, their promotional materials look too much like Crypto the Superdog and other various things.
And other superheroes, and I think they call themselves superheroes in the
their original
dashers.
I just want to say that one of the things about the big two publishing houses that always amuses the hell out of me is the two houses of comics is like. They will go on to say, oh, you know, we are the creators and the custodians of these tremendous media icons that all people relate to. Everyone knows who Spider-Man is. Everyone can relate to him. Everyone knows who Superman is, blah, blah, blah. And they try to put it out there. They try to really sell us on the idea that these are larger-than-life icons that belong to the world. And then anytime somebody, you know, does anything that vaguely resembles these icons, you know, it's litigation time. It's litigation time. And I understand that there's a dying industry that they're a part of, or not dying industry, but, you know, they're not doing so hot right now, and they want to protect that. I understand they want to protect that, but you attract more flies with honey, Marvel and DC, you know?
Well, that's the comic motto, is that you attract more with honey.
With the next generation of superheroes, which we'll probably get into further in another article, but God, this is so freaking ridiculous. And, you know, the Sunny Law PC law group, honestly, looking at their brochures, I wouldn't hire them in a million years. They look like an incredibly cheesy bunch of self-aggrandizers. But if they're the ones to bring down this completely ridiculous artifact, then I will take back everything I just said and pronounce them the greatest legal minds of our time.
Oh my God, it's so funny.
I hate this so much. I love this.
The applicant affirmatively represents that the dog, Cooper, depicted in Exhibit D of the Notice of Opposition is the actual pet Airedale dog belonging to Celia T. Sune, Esquire, a true photo of which, along with the various artist renditions, is annexed here too as Exhibit 3. Accordingly, any alleged likeness to any other dog, real or fictional, is coincidental and is, in any event, totally irreverent, as the mark sought to be registered is, once again, the word mark Superhero Lawyers. Superhero Lawyers, by the way, is my new favorite TV show that has.
Now they're being a little bit disingenuous there because
they're saying my dog looks like another dog. It's like, come on, it's a dog.
It's not the dog. It's the cape. It's the cape and the fact that the cape happens to look very much like an airbrushed version of Crypto's cape.
It's a cape! But he didn't invent
capes. They all look the same! All capes look the same! They're all a bedsheet, man!
It's a red cape with a yellow button. Let me finish.
No, Crypto they are have yellow on his cape.
Turnabout is fair play.
Oh. Okay.
It's entirely... I mean, I really can't...
Also, Cooper is clearly a terrier.
In Marvel, getting a little disingenuous language thrown their way when superhero is in the freaking dictionary.
Yeah, I don't think you know the word dictionary.
Dictionary terms should not be copyrightable. Dictionary terms should not be trademarkable.
Speaking of which, just so we don't have to cover it later, we can just get this out of the way now. Hentai, now an official dictionary term. Thanks, dictionaries.
I mean...
And yet Yuri isn't. That's just an outrage.
Yeah, what a shame. we'll skip over... let's see, of all these other articles, since we're nearing time, I just want to cover a few things in brief here. If you guys haven't seen Three Nuts, 3EANUTS.tumblr.com, it's the new Garfield minus Garfield style thing where they take Peanuts comics and take off the last panel, which normally has the punchline, and it just leaves you in complete despair.
Everybody else seems to think that this is the sensational comics find of 2011. I thought it was an interesting exercise for about 10 minutes.
Everything on the internet is the most amazing thing ever for a few minutes.
Well, it's a chance for people to be like, ooh, look, it's like the Garfield minus Garfield you haven't seen yet. I don't know. I can't wait
for Family Circus minus Jesus.
Yeah, I felt pretty much the same way about Garfield minus Garfield.
I still got to give it up.
This is nice. It's great. Nice to see something vaguely interesting being done with Charles Schulz's work. I'd rather spend more time talking about somebody who's doing something interesting and original.
See, I've got something better for you. Last year, our own friend Chris the Impact in Pink put together a great series called Minus John Plus John, where he took Garfield minus Garfield comics, took out John and put in John as in John from Watchmen. It's amazing because it's just, you know, Dr. Manhattan standing there having conversations with himself.
About lasagna.
Not talking to Garfield. It's pretty amazing. By the way, that can be found at unseenllc.com/mjpj. it's worth a shot. Okay. The two other things really quickly in brief. First of all, there's a list of characters that have now entered the public domain.
Yay.
Yeah. These were pretty amazing.
We should absolutely do something with one of these open license characters here. We should do something.
The article was found via a Bleeding Cool Roundup, also linked on PopCrunch. And the original is a Wikia post, which can be found at... we'll post it in the comments of today's feed. It's a list of public domain superheroes. They're absolutely amazing. Eric from Exern wanted to point out Brickbat. Brickbat's an amazing guy. That weird figure of the night, the Brickbat, is a robber dressed as a bat who kills people by throwing brick-like, death-dealing objects. When thrown... Now here's the thing. They work deadly enough.
They have to be boxing glove bricks?
Here's the thing. If bricks weren't deadly enough thrown... When thrown, they break up into poison gas that leaves no trace. He commissioned them from a scientist and then killed the scientist so that no one else could get their hands on the formula for bricks that dissolve into poison gas.
That Axe Cop is missing a golden opportunity for an additional character.
He then began a crime spree, which was finally stopped.
And this is a good guy?
Huh?
This is allegedly a good guy?
No, this is a bad guy.
This is a bad guy. Okay.
Yeah, he was on a crime spree. He appeared in Police Comics number 5.
In the very early comics, it was sometimes a little difficult to tell. I don't know if you ever read the Spectre's first appearance, but basically, he's like that. He's like that line in True Lies where Jamie Lee asks Arnold if he's killed anybody, and he says, "Yeah, lots of people
they're
are
bad.
All bad."
Yeah. Anyway, there's a ton. There's over 1,000 amazing characters, all of which are now in the public domain, including. I don't know if you guys saw any ones that you particularly want to call out. There's so many.
or is this just being reviewed? Because I was under the impression that things going into the public domain had slowed way down thanks to the revision of copyright laws.
Yeah, they did update the copyright laws, but some things kind of snuck in kind of before it due to how it was how it kind of caught up. So luckily that means Atomic Rabbit is now available, who gains superpowers by eating U-235 carrots, and his evil nemesis Sly Fox. And their two kids.
You shouldn't have said that. Now I know what my next project is.
I know. Atomic Rabbit, their webcomic. Anyway.
We should totally do the Legion of Public Domain Superheroes and the ongoing quest of why doesn't anybody care?
Oh, man. The Ghost of Ivanhoe? The Green Jet? The Green Giant? Wait, really? The Green Giant? Oh, different Green Giant. He's not Jolly. Not Jolly. Sorry.
Oh, oh, oh.
Oh, ho, ho, ho. His first appearance was in Green Giant number 1. Wow. Of course. Green Giant Comics number 1. That's amazing. Wow. Okay, anyway, yes, so there's a great list of public domain superheroes. Wow. Okay, well, we're at about time, guys. We didn't get a chance to talk about Lois Lane, Girl Reporter, but Dean Tripp... worked on a pitch for that, and we'll post a link to it anyway in the notes because it's a good read. I want to thank you guys both for being on the show. I'm sorry we didn't have a chance to talk about all these absolutely thrilling stories. Though I am proud to say this is the first week in a while that we didn't mention Comixology, which is kind of nice because they're just always doing something, and we're
mentioned Comixology.
Damn it! Oh, well.
That's an iPad app, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, everyone's always talking about how apps are the future and all that stuff.
We may continue the conversation a little bit after the taping goes forth. But no. The viewers, listeners will just have to wonder about that.
Yep. Sorry, guys. We're entirely too interesting to continue letting you hear us.
Yeah. Join the cool kids table, guys.
No, I'm sorry. You can't because you're not cool.
Right.
Us webcomic creators.
Thanks to everyone that helps put on the show every week. Thanks to Fess and Eric. And apologies that Mark and Alex couldn't be here this week. So with that, this has been the Webcomic Beacon, episode 176. Phil, any final words?
Synergy, Lumbar, and Colfax.
All right, and T?
Read Gilded Age.
Of course, be sure to read Gilded Age. It can be found at gildedage.net. With that, I've been Ross Scott of The System. You can check out my comic at systemcomic.com. Be sure to check out all our other podcasts of the Webcomic Beacon Network over at webcomicbeacon.com. I think that's enough web addresses for today. And so, like every week, I end our show by saying peanut butter and jelly, everyone. Have a great week. We'll see you next time.
What?
Tune in for more at webcomicbeacon.com.
Hey guys, this is Fess, real quick with some webcomic book releases. This is specifically for people who have webcomics and then are now making up basically print versions of that. We have a couple of them right now. Plus One at plusonecomic.com is taking pre-orders for their first book. So check that out. As well as Jazz and Jess at jazzandjess.com will be releasing their debut book, well, their first book as well. It's already available on Lulu, so go ahead and check that out. If anybody else is going from webcomic to print has a book release coming or a pre-order event happening, send us an email at webcomicbeacon@gmail.com.